This is Louise. I'm 14 years old and I live in Pittsburgh.
This is Joshua and I am 7 years old.
This is Jeffrey. I'm 18 years old and live in Lawrenceville.
This is Felix. I'm 14 years old and I live in Allegheny Commons. And this is the Kidsburg Podcast.
It almost sounds like science fiction, but it's real. Right here in Pittsburgh, biomedical engineers are helping people use only their brains to control robot arms. I'm Christine Sorensen, Kidsburg producer and KDKA anchor. And on today's Kidsburg podcast, we have an interview with two scientists who are doing this incredible work right here in Pittsburgh.
That sounds amazing. I'm Kidsburg's director, Yu-Ling Chang. Thanks for joining us for this Kidsburg podcast. After we learn about this scientific discovery, we'll also hear from local teens about the kinds of new things they'd love to learn this summer.
And I'm Melissa Rayworth, editor at Kidsburg. As our regular listeners know, we always start our episodes with a Pittsburgh gem, a place we think is really cool, and we want to make sure you know about it. Today, our hidden gem is Citizen Science Lab. Yu-Ling, what can you tell us about this incredible place?
This nonprofit is doing amazing work in South Hills and Hill District, where they bring in the community and they offer real science classes for kids to explore. I mean, you could do anatomy, astronomy, biology, chemistry, engineering, physics, technology, zoology. It's really amazing. So they have these workshops that you can take for free with your kids on the weekends. And if they're interested, then you can sign them up for classes and a course. I've gone with my kids and you really have to put on a lab coat. You've got to put on the goggles. You have to put on the blue gloves. And we did a polymer experiment where we mixed different things together. And they explain everything beforehand. They tell you what might be the dangerous part. So be careful here and make sure you don't overmeasure. And we created this puffy little animal at the end. And my child was like, I can't believe I made that. And that is science.
Wow, that sounds like so much fun. And I love that the parents are participating with the kids. I mean, I've seen some of the Remake Learning Days research about how valuable it is for kids to learn alongside parents. So I love that they have opportunities for that. But then the kids also can just do kid-only classes.
Yeah, I mean, they really do make science fun. I've seen some of the experiments like what you're talking about. And the kids, their faces are like lit up. I mean, they are so excited to be learning. It's a great way to get your kids hooked on science.
You can go to kidsburg.org where you can learn more about Citizen Science Lab and so many other places to discover fun hands-on learning. Look for the link at kidsburg.org/podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kidsburgh. You're listening to the Kidsburgh Podcast.
Imagine this, a person who's paralyzed from the neck down, controlling a robotic hand that's not even connected to his body, but controlling it with his mind, and even feeling the sensation of touching an object. Well, you don't have to imagine it. It's actually happening. I saw the videos featuring the work of University of Pittsburgh professors Dr. Jennifer Collinger and Dr. Robert Gaunt at the Rehab Neural Engineering Labs, and let me tell you, it's hard to believe. Jennifer and Robert, thanks so much for being part of our Kidsburgh podcast to share more about your work and inspire a future generation of scientists.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Jen and Rob, thank you both so much for being here. Can you share with us how you got interested in this particular kind of work and what kind of work happens in your lab, how that brain-robotic connectivity actually happens?
Sure. I guess I can start. Growing up, I had always been interested in math and science in school and was debating, you know, what I wanted to go into for college and to do for a career. And at the same time, I was very interested in medicine and rehab. I played sports and had injuries and needed to come back from that. And I discovered that this field called biomedical engineering existed, where it merged all of these things together. And that's sort of how I got into this area of work.
My story is maybe, you know, a little bit similar. I was always, you know, one of those kids that liked to take things apart, figure out how they worked, put them back together. And you know, some of my inspiration for this actually came from science fiction movies that were popular when I was a kid, like The Terminator and other things, you know, where this idea of humans and machines and robots interacting together, although that wasn't maybe the best story in that particular movie, you know, but that idea of how would machines and humans be together. And so I was interested in originally in robotics and went into mechanical engineering, but those ideas and thoughts really evolved from becoming less interested in the robots themselves, but really to this idea of how would we actually connect machines? How would we connect a robot to a person? And then, you know, like Jen, this led into this field of biomedical engineering, or maybe more specifically neural engineering, where much of the goal of neural engineering is to try and connect computers, robots, and machines that we create in the world to the nervous system of people.
So if you could explain kind of more for the non-science people, how it actually works, what you're doing.
Yeah. So our lab in general works with people who have injuries or diseases that limit their ability to move and interact with the world. And Rob mentioned the field of neural engineering, and that's the idea of trying to interface with the body and the nervous system to try to restore some function that has been lost to injury or disease. And so specifically for our project, we're working with people who have spinal cord injury. And so what that means is that the pathways that connect the brain to the muscles have been disrupted by some type of traumatic event or disease. And so there's no longer good communication there that limits their ability to move their arms, which obviously limits the things that they're able to do in their daily life. And so this idea of developing a brain-computer interface is to try to bypass those injured pathways. So we can record activity from the brain, try to interpret those patterns of activity to know what the participant is trying to move, if they're trying to move their arm, to grasp an object. And we can translate that information on a computer and then send it to the robot. And then from there, Rob's team will take over.
Yeah, and I think a really key idea here is that, you know, specifically, you know, in a person with spinal cord injury, the brain is healthy. Brain is normally functioning. Like Jen mentioned, it's just this connection between the brain and the body that's been disrupted. And so the fact that when people think about moving their own arms, that those patterns of activity, the brain's still doing that. In the same way, the parts of the brain that normally allow us to feel things are there, they're healthy and functioning, they've just lost again that connection to the body. So, you know, if you poke on your own finger, you know, you take a pen or, you know, your other hand or something like that and touch your own hand, there's a very specific part of your brain where the neurons, individual cells in your brain, become really active. They start buzzing away and firing like crazy. And we can find those spots and we can put small electrodes, individual, you know, you can imagine them like little tiny wires into this part of the brain. And then using really small pulses of electricity, we can activate these neurons. They're not normally active in a person with spinal cord injury because it's disconnected from the body, but we can turn them on with our electrical stimulation. And when we do that, when we turn these neurons on, these cells on in this particular part of the brain, people feel as if their own hand is being touched. Now, it doesn't feel like exactly what you or I feel all the time, but they do feel very obvious sensations coming from very specific parts of their body, in this case, the hand.
Wow. And so, as Christine mentioned, we had watched some of the remarkable videos about the work you do. So you two were the first scientists in the world to successfully give sensory feedback to a research participant with this kind of implant. That meant this person could actually feel the sensation of their hand being touched, even though it was actually the robot hand that was being touched. So I can understand what you're describing about somehow a computer is able to understand what the person is thinking about doing, and then that can be translated to what the robot can do. But so how were you able to give that person that sense of touch? How is that possible?
You know, an important idea here really is that, you know, cells are electric. They're not just that, but they communicate in some ways through by sending electrical signals to one another. And like I mentioned before, you know, our brain is divided into lots of different parts, right? Different parts of the brain allow us to see or to talk or to smell or to do all of these different things that we always, you know, that we experience or take for granted in our lives. There's a very specific part of our brain that allows us to feel things, right? The cells in that part of the brain are connected to the sensors in our hand or our feet or wherever, right? And it's just that they've lost their input. Right, they're sitting there, they're ready to be activated. It's just they're not activated anymore because of the spinal cord injury. And we can activate them artificially with electricity. And at least from that cell's perspective, right, it doesn't know the difference. It can't tell that it's not being activated by, you know, touching your own hand. All it knows is that it became activated. And the way we interpret that, the way the rest of our brain interprets that signal, is just like it got activated by touch, but we are activating it artificially using electrical stimulation through these microelectrodes that we've implanted into the brain.
Wow, that is such brilliant problem solving.
And, you know, like many things, there's a long history to go on here. And so while you're right that we were the first ones to do this by with this particular kind of device in the brain, we've known, for instance, that in, you know, somebody with an amputation, right, maybe somebody who has lost their hand through an accident, you can go into the nerves out in the limb, in the body, and electrically stimulate those nerves. And people will, again, feel this missing part of their body. And we've known that for decades. And so there was a lot of evidence to go on to think that when we went to do this in the brain, it would work as we hope.
Wow, that's exciting. So what's the ultimate goal of this research?
Well, I think the idea is that hopefully we can restore function to the person's own body. Unfortunately, we don't yet know how to actually repair that injured spinal cord or those pathways between the muscles and the brain. So we want to try to use this brain-computer interface to do that artificially. And right now, what we're doing is interfacing a robotic arm with the brain, but eventually we would definitely like to restore function to the person's own body by either stimulating their muscles or the nerves that innervate them.
It's interesting. A lot of our listeners, parents and kids, although they may never do the kinds of work that you guys are doing, they need problem solving and they need to figure out how to surmount challenges, which obviously I'm sure you guys many times ran into a roadblock in your research and had to find a way around it. So we would love to hear, what are some of the challenges that you're working to overcome now? And what advice would you have for kids or parents who have a challenge in front of them and it's tough and they have to find the perseverance to keep on working on it?
Maybe I'll start with that. And I think you mentioned a word just there, perseverance, that I think is, you know, really important. None of these things happen quickly. And so all of this takes a long time. And then maybe as a specific example of like a big idea that we are trying to achieve, but we still just don't yet know how to do it, is really how to create sensations that feel completely normal, completely natural, ones that are indistinguishable from those things that you or I feel all the time when we pick up different objects, right? I told you before that we can stimulate in the brain and people can feel these sensations coming from their own hands, and all of that's true. But I can't create sensations that reliably make it feel like I'm picking up a warm cup. I can't tell really if it's hot or cold. I can't really tell how rough the surface is. I can't tell all of these fine details that we take for granted. People can feel some things, but it is far from that sort of full repertoire, that full sense that we have right now. And part of the reason for that is that one would be that we don't have the technology to do it. Right? We don't have the kinds of devices that we would need to be able to activate the brain with. So there's just like, there's an engineering, mechanics problems, chemistry problems, all of those kinds of things across many fields. And there's also neuroscience problems. What I mean by neuroscience is that we don't really know how the brain does those things in the first place. And so if we don't know how the brain does it, there's no way that we can hope to create an artificial system that does the same thing. So it's one of the things that I find really exciting about this field of neural engineering generally, is that people with all kinds of different interests and skills or abilities can contribute to it. We need people in basic math and materials and engineering, as well as people that are interested in brain function and everything in between. So it's a really fun field to be in, and there are a lot of problems yet to solve. I'm probably never going to solve all of these problems in my career. So there's lots and lots of opportunity for people that are interested in building devices that help people to contribute for a long time to come.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And Jen, did you want to contribute on the how to overcome challenges?
Yeah, I mean, I think engineering is problem solving and perseverance. You know, that's what the career is. And on the motor control side of things, we're only recording from a really small number of neurons, like about 200 neurons in order to control this robotic arm, whereas you're typically using hundreds of millions of neurons to perform that same movement with your own arm. And so our ability to interpret those signals and turn them into movement is not perfect. And so it's really doing our research to find out what is known about the way that the brain controls movement, putting forth our best guess about how we think we should do that, and not being afraid to fail or to revise that solution. And so really just trying to keep, adding to the amount of control that we can get and kind of revisit those solutions along the way.
I love what you said about not being afraid to fail. So often when I've interviewed all kinds of scientists and creative people, I keep hearing that one of the most important things is to really get excited about failing forward and experimenting and knowing that even when things don't come out perfectly, sometimes that's when you learn the most.
Yeah, exactly. We learn a lot from things that don't work and how to make that better and try again.
Well, I love hearing you talk about these challenges, and hopefully the kids listening are taking on that challenge and will be the next generation of scientists. So if you would share, especially with our kids listening, what it's like to be a scientist, especially a scientist working on discoveries that could help people. And do you have any recommendations on any young people who might want to pursue this as a career?
Sure. I think in terms of advice, really just being excited about, you know, any topic and getting curious about it and trying to learn more about it will, you know, prepare you for this career. I really got into this field of biomedical engineering and neural engineering because I had the opportunity to work with people and see the impact of the math and science that we were doing behind the scenes on a person, you know, very directly. And we're really fortunate with our studies that our study participants become part of the team. We work with them multiple times per week. They give us feedback about what's working well, what's not. And so being able to incorporate that personal aspect into the engineering challenges that we're trying to solve, it really keeps me motivated and is why I got into this field.
Yeah, and I'll add, you know, at least in terms of the things that kids can be doing early on, I think it's really important to take a broad approach to things. You know, and while it's absolutely true that, you know, thinking about and doing well and, you know, working hard in math and science and those sort of traditional STEM fields is important, I spend a lot of time writing and I spend a lot of time thinking. And so making sure that, you know, you put effort in everywhere and being really creative, you know, is really important. And so I think, you know, on average, actually, you'll find a lot of people in science who have done quite a lot of music in their past, I think. Thinking about and getting experience in music helps you think creatively and helps you think about precision and all kinds of different things. And so there's really a huge variety of backgrounds that people come from. And, you know, curiosity and perseverance, I think, probably really dominate those things that help you, you know, in a career.
Well, Jen and Rob, thank you so much for all you've done to inspire all of our young scientists listening now, and especially for the work you're doing at the University of Pittsburgh.
What an incredible journey. I mean, just listening to them talk about what they do and how they create it and all the neurons and how they connect them is amazing. But what I really appreciated about that interview is how they talked about that they acknowledge all the work that other people have done before them and the work that they've done and then the work that's going to come next, right? And so to really think of it as continuum, it's perseverance, that what you're doing is going to help something.
And it's hard for kids sometimes. You know, we all want that quick result, but that's really a great lesson right there. And I also loved how he said that things like his music and his creative writing, all those actually help with science, which I wouldn't have necessarily made that connection. So it was really cool to hear from an actual scientist.
Yeah, that was really inspiring. And as you guys said, this idea of the perseverance and not only failing forward, but not being disappointed necessarily when an experiment doesn't quite go right because you know you're learning things from it. So the failing's not just okay. It's like a necessary ingredient in getting where you're trying to get to.
And I will say, now that you've heard the interview, you're going to want to see the video because that really shows what they've done and what they're talking about. And we've got a link to more scientific breakthroughs at kidsburg.org/podcast. And in a moment, we're going to hear from local teenagers about what they're looking forward to doing or learning this summer.
You're listening to the Kidsburg Podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kidsburg.
Hearing about the work happening at Pitt makes me want to learn new things and make discoveries. Is there anything you're hoping to learn in the months to come? The students at SLB Radio's Youth Media Center did some investigating by asking other students this question. What do you look forward to doing or learning this summer?
Something that I would like to learn over the summer. Probably three things. One, how to roller skate backwards. Two, how to rollerblade. I know how to roller skate, but I don't know how to rollerblade. And probably to learn more about swimming. I know the basics, but like, I want to learn more.
Surf City is going on this summer, so that's really cool. It's a camp for a week long. It's in Michigan.
I have to do something big this summer, because if I'm not doing something, I get depressed. I've been thinking about the mix between film and theater, maybe something with that.
I guess I look forward to learning this summer how to throw a football, because I've never really learned to do that, and I've seen other people do it, but, you know, I want to join in and figure out how to throw a football correctly.
From the Youth Media Center at SLB Radio.
From the Youth Media Center at SLB Radio, this is Isolena.
This is Marley.
Hi, my name is C. I'm from Pittsburgh Kappa 6 through 12.
My name is Ben. I'm 16 years old, and I live in Braddock.
This was another fun episode, and we are so glad that you could join us.
Yeah, we now have 24 episodes available, and you can check out any episodes you haven't heard already.
Just go to kidsburg.org/podcast to find them all, and be sure to sign up for our free weekly Kidsburg newsletter to find the news stories and online guides that help grownups with the big, beautiful job of parenting in the Pittsburgh region and beyond.
Thanks for joining us for the Kidsburg Podcast.
This is Lamel. I'm in the 8th grade, and this is the Kidsburg Podcast.
We'll be back in the months to come with more new episodes.
Until then, we hope you'll visit kidsburg.org to learn about the resources and advice from local experts that can help all kids have the best opportunity to thrive.